Hi, this is Martha Burtis with the Division of Teaching and Learning Technologies at the University of Mary Washington. Up next, we're hearing a conversation about blogging at UMW, featuring Ernie Ackerman, Teresa Kaufman, Leanna Giancarlo, Steve Greenlaw, Mike Killian, Jeff McClurkin, and Marcel Rotter.
Good morning. In this session, we want to host a discussion, actually a conversation, on blogging at Mary Washington. Hopefully that's a microcosm of blogging in academia more generally. We have 12 colleagues who have volunteered, with only a few twists of the arm, to talk about their experiences with blogging here. And I might point out that we've had a few new additions since the brochure came out. And so what you might want to do is check out, if you go to the Faculty Academy Wiki, it has everything in the most recent form. This is the contents. You can click to get rid of them. Here's where we are. Here's the list of our panelists today. One thing that you're going to notice is that their experiences are quite varied. Blogging is a tool, like writing is a tool. There is no one-size-fits-all application. So hopefully you'll get a sense of the breadth of possible uses here. What we're going to talk about is what got people into blogging. And the flip side of that is what inhibits academics maybe from blogging. I know that there's some people in the audience who have dabbled in blogging. They've read blogs. They've lurked. They've talked a lot about wanting to do blogging someday. And so far, they haven't actually done it yet. So hopefully, we can hear about some of those factors. We want to hear what have the bloggers actually done? How well has it worked? What has worked well? And also, what has worked badly? Okay, we want this to be as honest as possible. And hopefully, we'll have a good time and we'll learn something. Feel free to interject questions whenever you like. Imagine that we're at the faculty staff dining room having lunch or something. You know, you don't need to let your tie get in the way of asking a good question. Okay, with that, I think we'll just open it up to our panelists.
Can I just share mine off?
Absolutely.
I think this blog's been up for maybe 3 or 4 years. I use it for lots of different purposes, mostly for myself, to kind of keep track of what I'm doing. I sometimes, so this is just about, you know, what I'm going to do tomorrow, that sort of stuff. Tend to get off on political issues occasionally, and when something bothers me, I just, you know, put it up or talk about it or something that I've seen somewhere interesting somewhere else. And this is a little thing about something that we did in our department or with the mathematics department. And the other thing that I use this for, and I'm not sure the best way to find it because it's back a ways. And this is, you know, this is purely technical stuff that I've done for my classes. A student will ask a question or we're talking about something in class, and it requires something written up about it, it seems to me. And so what I would do often is I would post it in the blog and then point my students to it and say, if you want to read more about this particular topic, there it is with some links to some other stuff. So my blog is not one where I have a long-standing discussion about some pedagogical topic or about some philosophical topic. I tend to jump around a lot, and I'm not always all that consistent. I also thought it would be a great idea, which I've done a little bit of so far, is to keep track of what's happening in the garden this year. So I can take pictures on certain days, and I know, you know, what's going on, because I often, you know, with great envy, read about Thomas Jefferson's garden books, the records that he kept on gardening, which, have, you know, everybody talks about how great they are and how long they've lasted. And I thought, why not use a blog for something like this, too? So mine is strictly for my personal use. I use it with my teaching when I have some technical explanations that I want to let everybody know about. And, you know, those things come up semester after semester, so this is a place for folks to go. So I don't know if it's the same as, I don't think it's the same as, I know it's not the same as Steve's blog, and it's not the same as Gardner's blog, and I haven't read everybody else's blog, but anybody want to say anything or talk about it? Okay. Cool.
All right.
All right, I'll go next. How about that? I'm Teresa. I'm at the other campus, College of whatever I am. I don't know. I don't know. The North Campus. And I have several different blogs, and I predominantly use my blog in my classroom with my students. I teach teachers how to teach.
And I always am looking for things for them to utilize in their classrooms, in their personal life. And blogging is very much a community-oriented tool. That's how I look at it. And some of my students, they always start, one thing, I can say some positives and negatives. Here's a blog. This student got very comfortable with blogging, wanted to personalize her blog. How I use blogging in this class, students summarized readings, found extra resources outside of the classroom. Students would come and read and kind of learn from their experiences. The difference between a blog and a discussion board I found in my classes, students got more personal here than they would on a discussion board. Students here, some of my comments at the end, I have them do a course reflection at the end, and some of their comments said, well, because I utilize both in my class, discussion board and blogging. And some of the comments came back, whenever I do a discussion board, I always read what everyone else is saying first. And then I always feel uncomfortable, or sometimes I might feel uncomfortable because it was already said and I'm just repeating myself, or, you know, I'm just agreeing with somebody else. But here on blogging, I would write, I would read, I would learn, I would explore. And then I would go out and look at other students' blogs. So it was a different experience, and I kind of like that. And I didn't think of it like that before.
There is some evidence that
yes.
students treat blogs as more their own
yes.
than discussion boards, which are the teachers, in a
right.
sense.
The thing that I find about that is, at first, it's very, you know, it's kind of a step back thing. They're uncomfortable. They're not really sure why it has to be public. They're not really sure if it is public. Nobody's come to it. So it's kind of a touchy-feely thing. But then they get lost in the blog itself. And this student did an excellent job with her blog. She wrote well. She was able to process and think and plan. And she really, a lot of the other students came back and read her blog a lot. What I also found at the end, I have them, they have to cite everything because I just think that's a really good thing. And they were citing other students' blogs. So they were really learning from the content from the blog. So it really became a good personal experience. Well, I could go on forever, so the next person.
Question?
Sure, I love questions.
What kind of did you give them guidance on what kind of content you expected of them?
Well, I wanted them to. I did. I do blogging in all different ways, and I do it differently each semester to try things out. And this semester, I wanted them to summarize their readings and bring in extra material and personalize their readings, apply it to their work life or their research. So I did. Sometimes I have personal journals where they just are talking about issues that relate to instructional technology because that's what I teach. So you do have to provide guidelines, I find. It's good to kind of structure it first. And you don't want to structure it too much because you want them to kind of take control of it. And that's kind of the purpose that I want them to utilize. Yes?
I guess I have a nuts and bolts question.
Excellent.
You have your blog, and then the students are, what would the phrase be, sub-blog within your blog?
Well, this right here was that student's blog. I did try this semester. I had a blog for the class, for one of my classes,
right.
that I would comment about other students' postings or provide research. Students could comment to my blog. But they were in control of their own blog
okay.
that led them through the course.
Okay.
And we were commenting back and forth. And then I wanted them to go out to the blogosphere and read other blogs and comment on other blogs, but they only did that once when I, you know, I stuck a, you know, you must do this! They didn't like that because they said, no, 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 they should do it again. So it takes a while for them to kind of get used to this blogging thing.
Imagine if you asked them to optionally write a paper.
Right.
You know?
Right. So they didn't buy into the whole blog community like I you know.
Can I just ask one more thing? And this, how do you characterize the students in your classes? Like what level are they at?
Level?
Yeah.
From infancy to older adult.
And
you know, and skill. So,
and what are they doing when they're not in school? When they're not taking a class? Are they teachers?
They're teachers, okay. And they're aspiring teachers. So some of them have very little technology skill. They still think a mouse runs across the floor. And some are just phenomenal.
Thanks, Teresa. Leanna, you want to go next?
Okay. Well, while this is coming up, I'm Leanna Giancarlo, and I'm in the chemistry department. Yes.
Are we?
But I also teach a history of science course, so you need a little bit of background. I've only taught the course twice. This is the second iteration of it. And last year at the Faculty Academy, one of the keynote speakers from Educause had mentioned that our students fall into the net generation, that they're more connected, more experiential, they like more discussion-based activities or team-based activities. And so I was going to try to incorporate this into my history of science course. What we did last year was, as the final project, the students divided themselves up into pairs, or there was a team of three, and they presented posters on an underrepresented scientist. So this was a woman or a minority group in the sciences. Unfortunately, they didn't do the poster session in the traditional format where all the posters would be set up and then you rotate around on an individual basis and attend each poster. They wanted to see everyone's poster simultaneously. So they made each presenting group get up in front of the class and present to the class, which defeated the purpose of poster presentation. So I thought, okay, well, this isn't going to work because they don't quite get the idea. And honestly, because it's in an interdisciplinary course, it's not really essential that they learn this particular type of skill. So initially, I asked Jeff McClurkin about his web pages. I thought, well, this would be a really interesting format, be more connected for them to get across these underrepresented scientists. But after talking with Jeff, his use of the web pages in his American Cultures and Technology course meshes really well with the course objectives. It doesn't necessarily mesh as well with mine. And the amount of training that the students would have to undergo to do it was a little bit too much from my point of view. So then Steve bounced into my office in January and forced me to an hour-long discussion on why I should be using blogs in my course. So in an effort to get him out, I said, yeah, sure, whatever. Sounds good to me. So what I did instead, because after talking to him, honestly, this seemed like a much less intimidating and a less time-intensive activity for them from my perspective. I had Andy Rush give them a class-long presentation on what blogs were, how they were to use them. He set up usernames and things for them on the class blog site. And what you can see here, these are just a few of the students' presentations. What I liked about this format was that they could incorporate pictures. This is the one of Marie Curie. The one on Jane Goodall is exceptional. So they had to cover things like the biography, what the historical and social and political contexts were at the time that the scientists made their revolutionary discoveries, bit about why they were considered to be underrepresented. But this one is really interesting because what the students did, in addition to all the photos and text, they put on links to other interesting sites. They incorporated videos, and one of the two student presenters got so into this that she actually commented on her own site to add more information. So it was a much more dynamic format, in my opinion. They could really get into the idea that this was supposed to be a conversation. Now, unfortunately, they weren't quite as connected as I had hoped that they would be. To get them started, what I did was I posted some blogs of my own that went with overwhelming themes in the course. Like, what is science? In order to start the course, we have to actually come up with a definition of what science is and what it means to all of us before we can actually talk about its history and how it's progressed. So I told them that I would give them extra credit for posting to my own postings. And as you can see, out of the 11 students who ended up staying in the course, they had an overwhelming response to the opportunity for points thrown at them. So I got 3 to my What is Science posting, did science and religion, you know, really generalized things that weren't necessarily topics for the papers that they write in the course, but were things that we'd been talking about all along.
Lena, so, did you ask them at the beginning of the class, like, how many people knew what a blog was, how many people had actually written a blog before?
There were probably maybe 2 or 3 who were comfortable with the format.
So this is new. This is brand new for a lot of them.
Which is why I was giving them points. It wasn't something that they had to do. I didn't want to intimidate them. I wanted them to get used to it in something where they were benefiting.
That might explain why you only got 3 comments the first go round.
But some of them, you know, would, you know, here you go, Dr. G. I mentioned a lot of movies in the class, and so they would find images from the movies and stick those back up. Someone gave me Harry Potter. I like The Matrix. I think it demonstrates one of the points in Thomas Kuhn's book on scientific revolution. So someone put in the "there is no spoon" picture from the movie. So some of them really got into it, but they didn't respond as favorably as I would have hoped.
Mm-hmm. How did you handle the grading aspect? Did you make this participation? Did you make it a separate category?
For the extra credit in terms of the grading, that went into either, they do almost daily postings to Blackboard on what they had read, so that went into their journal entries, or it could have gone into participation. They're equally weighted in terms of the course. For the end project, that was an entirely separate grade, and the majority of the grade was on the content of the blog rather than the presentation. The presentation also did have some bearing on their grade, but it was probably 20 points out of 100 as opposed to the 70 or more that went into the actual content of how they developed it. Mm-hmm.
And also, how would you compare this to using the discussion board instead? Because I've been using the discussion board on Blackboard. At least it provides ease of seeing how much they did, if nothing else, at the end of the semester. And I'm wondering if this is harder for them to get into if they're not tech savvy. For the discussion board, they learn it instantly. Is it as easy for them to start doing this?
From my perspective, since this is my first time using a blog, I didn't find the format of doing the postings and things intimidating at all. And, I mean, Andy was fantastic about showing them exactly how to get it. In fact, while he was instructing them, several of them were putting postings up to see if they could do it, and including things like, they didn't actually go as far as video, but they were putting up images and graphics and stuff like that. So I don't necessarily think that the format intimidated them. I just don't think that they were necessarily as involved with the process. And that was a little bit disconcerting to me because it is a discussion-based course. I also don't use discussion forums in the class. When they do journal entries on Blackboard, I run it as a quiz or a test so that only I can see it, because I don't want students reiterating, oh, well, so-and-so had a really good point. I want to see what they individually thought about the readings so that I can use that in class as a start to the discussion if no one's volunteering immediately.
I don't know, but, you know, the URL on this thing just almost seems like this is temporary. And I just wonder if, you know, it might, like what the other presenter was doing, where people create their own blogs, mm-hmm. if you could get something that was more, you know, not so just like an academic exercise. You know, something that was maybe a little more, you know, permanent, it might help students get more involved.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, we can certainly... I'll talk to my buddy in the back of the room about making it more permanent
next year. You know, I mean, it's not a hard thing to do. I mean, they could just mm-hmm. sign up with Blogger and do the same sorts of things students could do. And just sometimes, I think sometimes folks put a little more weight into something that they think is not just made up for this course.
Jim, did you have a question?
Well, I did, but I think you answered it about the question of putting the journals up to Blackboard. I mean, could that be a way to make it more permanent, as Ernie is saying, by using the, could you at least consider using a blog for that space as well?
Oh, definitely. In fact, one of the things that I'm considering next year is maybe eliminating some of the journal entries and making them do more blogging on global ideas, or having them originate, this is what I think a major theme is for the class, and this is how I would approach it. Have them take more initiative. That is.
I wasn't clear on the presentations on the, is that, did they then present those in class too?
They did present those in class.
Was there, you know, as you read through them, I mean, one of the things that has concerned me sometimes has been the copying and pasting. Were you concerned about that, or were you able to check on that?
No, in fact, the grammar in most of them set me off so much, I had to edit on my own. So another thing that I would change for next year is that I would edit them, and then they could repost them, because it was... So I don't think, unless wherever they were getting them from, and the references were really easy to check, because... They used actual books, like paper, or the websites were listed as well. I don't think anyone would have made that many spelling errors.
So how did they present them? I mean, so they had, here they were on the blog, but then how did they present them in class?
They just went through them, and for instance, the students who were presenting on Marie Curie would say, they would walk through, not, they would read what was there, but they would more or less walk through and say, okay, here's the historical context of the time in which she lived. And they describe, you know, her family circumstances and then her marriage and why she had a harder time getting into science than a woman would say today. Then they would go through what her great discoveries were and things like that. But, I mean, it was actually very dynamic, because then the students could ask questions of each other and then go back to the blog and refer to it.
And could they see it before they present it?
Mm-hmm.
So they could do that.
Mm-hmm. They were all on. Angela?
Well, one question that I have is, did you have to do any information control? That is to say, you know, some presentations are better than others in terms of the reliability of the information that students pull together. And so I was just wondering if you encountered that and how you dealt with it.
We had several discussions prior to doing any sort of paper writing, and I included this in terms of sort of paper writing, in terms of what reliable sources are and where you could find reliable sources. And while Wikipedia is really easy to get to and has lots of information, pictures from it are good, but you really have to consider where the text originated. So we did have a lot of conversations about reliability in terms of sources.
Do you ever have to change or edit out information from, or misinformation from the student's blog?
No, actually, they were all very accurate. They were pretty good about what they finally went with.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Leanna, I got to give you the hook, but
yeah,
I want one more question. have you given any thought to using these products next time you teach the class, mm-hmm. as resources? Because mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's a wonderful yep. application.
I really liked them. I thought they were well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan?
I have a terrible confession to make. Most of you know I'm a Southerner, but my grandmother was from Brooklyn. And so when Jim Groom walks into the building, I suddenly have all these childhood memories of dark black coffee, cigarette smoke, and frying pans to the backside. And if anybody needs a translation for Jim, I'd be happy to provide. He made me an offer I couldn't refuse. What I'd like to talk about, I do not use blogging yet in the classroom because I'm a technophobe, and I'm one of these people that lurks and lurks and lurks and never does anything, so thank God they've sent Jim along. What I'd like to talk about today, two quick things, and I'll get it up in just a second, but let me mention it first before I wow you by showing this. The first is, if you are somebody that is not yet comfortable, not yet using it, this is why we have the ITs, and also, and I know Gardner will be embarrassed by me bragging on him, so that's why I'm doing it. Gardner has an amazing ability to find time in a schedule that has no time. I think he lives in the Matrix. I had two students this semester, and I'm going to show you what they did in terms of blogging. I had very, very little to do with this, and be the first to admit this. So really, it'd be more appropriate for Gardner and Jim to come up. But Steve wanted to show that blogging can be done in a third world country. So yes, Chandler can do blogging. The Peace Corps is there with Jim, so we're good. The first one I want to show you is a student named Matt Tucker, who the only reason he was a business major is his father is a CPA, and basically said, if we're paying your way through college, you will be a business major. This is why we have Mary Washington in double majors, is so that we can pick up these folks and get them in the rescue raft. But Matt is an incredibly creative young man, and he has a lot of different passions, a lot of different talent. One he wanted to do, if any of you have gone to the student film festivals, he's the infamous Galactic Donut Boy. If you haven't gone there, you've missed something, so go get the DVDs from a couple years ago. Anyway, Matt, his original intention, he was accepted at the Culinary Institute of America up in New York, and was actually going to go there and start on a career in being a restaurateur, until he got interested in sustainable agriculture. And let me go to his site and blog, and also urge you to note this down. It's not, we'll get it into the schedule, but it's something that is an incredible piece of work, if I'm kicking it in right. Posthaste.com. There we go. Let's put a period in there, Hubbard. You can do it. I'm also getting the age where I'm tenured, so I have to wear glasses. Caught up to me. All right. This is Matt's blog, basically, and let me talk a little bit about what he does, and also urge you to go and play with this, because you're going to discover a real talent. I cannot tell you the number of people who have contacted me based upon this student's blog. I've had folks, everything from the medical profession, just incredible comments, most of which they've sent me stuff saying, when is his book coming out? And I have to tell them, he's an undergraduate. He's no longer an undergraduate. He got his diploma. He was the kid that looked a little bit hungover and still made it on the stage. But what's really neat with Matt, and one I wanted to emphasize for those of you that are considering doing this, particularly with independent studies, this got to the point in the semester where I literally had to take Matt aside and say, are you passing your other courses? Uh-huh. Because it became a passion. I don't know how much time you spent with him, Gardner. It must have been hours. And what was so exciting about it, and I hope I don't sound too jealous as a teacher, is to see a student catch fire. So much so, and what Ernie was talking about earlier, you'll notice he's migrated it to a permanent site. This is up. He's taking a few days off. He's literally talking about, this is just what's come up. It lets your students free. It lets them step out of the mold and go beyond what you've done. And what's so exciting for this, and why I'm pushing it on you, those of you that haven't done this yet, is they teach you. They come back to you, they come to your office hours, they start talking about this. Half the time I have to go to gym and get a translation for what they said, but I'm good at faking like I know what they're talking about. And that excitement, that energy, the comment that Chip said at the beginning of our discussion here, where he talked about, let me make sure, yesterday we had a speaking intensive seminar where they say you only catch 25% of what they say, so I hope I got this right, where he talked about innovation, integration, and imagination. I'd like to suggest we turn those into verbs and say innovate, integrate, and I'm going to make up a new word because Anna knows I like to make new words up, imaginate, to imaginate. Anything your students can think of doing, they can do. They can go out of the classroom, they can do really neat stuff. This is an example of a student that just, went hog wild. Let me show you an example real quick.
Dan, quick question.
Yeah, sure.
This posting was after graduation, right?
Yeah.
So he already got the degree.
Yeah.
And yet he was still doing this stuff.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. This is what I'm saying about. He has caught fire. I'm glad you asked that question, because as of now, he's still not sure if he's going to go to the Culinary Institute. What he is doing this summer, and he got this through doing this project, which was amazing. The whole idea behind the project, real quick, and I won't take other folks' time, but so that you can go to this. The idea is to link sustainable agriculture to the restaurant business directly. The idea that local restaurants should be using local food products. And you say, well, of course they do. No, most of them do not. And go ahead.
But why are you surprised, Steve? I mean, this is exactly what we want. I mean, what we want our students to do is to do outside of the academic, outside of doing stuff.
You mean education is bigger than school?
Yeah.
It's not even education. Right. It's what they love to do and what they can do.
So this was an independent study?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And needless to say, he got a good grade, so I don't want to be accused by Dr. Bear of grade inflation. You know, this is one of those, and it was so funny because he calls me up and goes, did I get a grade above a B? And I'm kind of like, you know, boy, you asked some dumb questions. Anyway.
So how'd you grade it?
How'd I grade it?
Yeah.
I stood back and went, wow.
Well, no. So presentation gets you?
No, it's not. Because in addition to this, and I'd be happy to show you, he literally wrote a master's thesis.
I know, but I'm thinking of the content of this thing.
Content is incredible. This is just a little piece of his project.
Yeah,
the remaining part of his project, it is truly innovative. As I said, I've had several people, not just grad schools, but businesses and stuff, contact me about when's his book coming out.
So how do they know about it? Just the blog?
Through the blog. Okay. Through the blog and the interaction. And it's just been, as I said, it's been a thrill for me. And I think that's one reason Steve's forced me to come up here, despite my wanting to lurk in the background, is
You never actually said you'd do it.
But, you know, it really is such an opportunity to explode the box. To get out of that classroom environment of, you know, chalk talk and just, you know, the standard, the usual, the typical, and do something completely different. And now, what I've talked to Jim about, I think I just lost my summer vacation because Jim's already got 50 ideas for me to do. But now take this, bring this into the classroom and show the students, you know, here's what you can do as a business major. I think too often our business majors don't realize the creative implications of what they can do. Let me show you one that's not quite this quality, but coming from a student. Yeah,
before
sorry.
Before you leave there, could you scroll down just a little?
Go ahead, Gardner.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple things about this particular student. As soon as his blog went up, he began getting comments from around the world. How did they find it? One of the interesting things about what some folks call the blogosphere or the blogging community is that special interests, like food blogging, for example, have a tremendously committed community of bloggers. They have searches they subscribe to so that as soon as a new blog comes online on a particular topic, they know about it. They go read it, the blogs begin to link to each other, and a new node in that network is formed. I spent about an hour and a half with Matt. What does that mean? It means that all I had to do was point him in the right direction. Within a week, he had bought his domain, set up his web hosting service, had the blog up. He had been keeping a static web page for a couple of years in which he had essentially rewritten a web page every few days and uploaded it to his personal web space here at the university. When he learned just a little bit about what was possible with his own domain, with his own web hosting account, the next thing I knew, he not only had caught fire, he built himself a little blogging civilization here. So it is quite remarkable what a highly motivated student will do, writing about something they're intensely interested in, when what we do is point in the right direction.
Real quick, because I'm taking too much time, let me show you one that's not quite this level of quality, but an interesting story behind it. I have a student, just graduated, Andrew Gendreau. And he doesn't pronounce it that way, I do.
Can I ask Gordon? Here you're making the comparison between this and his website. I mean, what was it exactly that he was, the problems that he was experiencing and that would have one choose to create a blog as opposed to creating a website?
It's so much easier.
Yeah.
The blog does all the work. You just type the text in and insert the images. You don't have to know HTML or any of that stuff.
But it's easier to change, too. Yeah. It's a running dialogue.
Yeah, you'll often hear blogs compared to static web pages. It's all on the World Wide Web, but the blog is set up to receive chronological updates, new posts. It's more like a constant printing press rather than a poster that you'd make and put on the wall. That's a crude analogy, but a blog wants to be updated. A blog easily links to other blogs. It's almost as if you've stepped into a particular medium. Almost like a radio station or a newspaper or something like that. It's simply set up to be able to be updated frequently and connected easily. and writing, and I actually, we'll all have a chance to experience this. I'll put in a plug at the end of the session, the discussion here. We've got a blog set up people can play with during Faculty Academy and see some of these things in action.
I think one other key point that hasn't been brought up, this is a conversation.
Right.
A web page is not a conversation. This has the ability to add comments and have some kind of dialogue that continues, where the web page is kind of just information coming back.
Before I get hooked, real quick, got to put in a plug for our Canadian Studies program. Before Dr. Barra goes, we don't have one yet. Andrew Jandl, and for those that have had him, that's not how you pronounce his name, but I'm working on him. Basically, his family came, his grandparents came from Canada. He lives in New England. He had no clue about his ancestry, no clue about this. And I was picking on him. I said, you know, you've got a great Quebecois name. And he comes to me as a senior and says, I'd like to do a web page on business in Canada as an independent study. I said, go for it. In the course of doing that, he ran afoul of our Brooklyn man, Jim Groom, and Jim talked him into including, and this is what I just want to briefly mention, in addition to his static web page, this includes a blog section. And so same type thing that you can start with one project and you can make it interactive. Now, you know, Gardner is being modest about the time he puts into stuff, because when you actually go to these various comments, you'll see that it's Gardner and Jim that are encouraging, that are pushing. And what's very interesting, I talked with Andrew right after graduation, was kind of saying, so are you going to keep this up? And he says, well, I'm going to play golf for a week, but then I'm going to get back to it.
So you mean the IT staff are acting like teachers?
Uh-huh. Not just acting, they are teachers.
Oh,
they are teachers.
That's an idea. Okay, I'd love to hear more, but Gardner only gave us an hour for this session, so I'm going to have to keep it
up. Well, I want to tell you about something different. I did had a forum assignment in my class, not a blog, so someone may want to comment on that and address the differences. First, I'd like to thank Gardner Campbell and Andy Rush for helping me set this up. Gardner for introducing the forum idea, and Andy for actually setting it up for me. I told him I was interested in promoting further discussion of topics introduced in the introductory biology classroom. And they both thought that this format, the forum, was the best way to do that. And I'll show you the, this is the URL, and these are all screen captures here, so I can't do anything more with it. So this is the introductory entry page here. And this is the page where the students select the current forum. So the way I described the forum to my students was that this was a place where they were going to make short postings about topics that were discussed in class, mentioned in class. So they had a couple options. One, they could introduce or begin a new discussion thread, and the other was that they could respond to postings that other people made. So the postings appear in a what's known as a threaded or linear view. So the most recent postings at the top, and the later ones are down at the bottom. So this forum was a closed system. So only the students who are in my class and who are registered were allowed to participate, or they were the only ones that could read or make entries. And here's one example. This is the lethal injection discussion thread. This was based on me trying to make a connection between process of lethal injection execution and heart function. And this started off as a biological discussion, but pretty quickly ended up into more of a moral discussion, although I don't think that's necessarily bad, because they're making connections between biology and practical issues. A second reason I had for using the forum is I wanted to add some variety to the evaluation process. In other words, I wanted to give students another way of earning some points. So the way I set this up was it was worth a total of 35 points, which is 5% of the course work, and they were to make 15 entries. Each one was worth 2 points, and in addition, they were given 5 points for submitting a hard copy of what they considered to be their best five entries. And the software allowed me to easily account for these entries, the number they made, and then I scanned through them to look at the content. So I was the moderator, and that gave me the ability to delete inappropriate comments if there were such, and also to respond to individual students. So what worked well? One thing I noticed was that students who were very quiet in class often made very thoughtful and very well-written comments. So I really appreciated that. Most of the comments appeared to be enthusiastic. In fact, at times, I felt like students had forgotten that this was an assignment, right? That they were generally interested in doing this. And there was very little what is, the lingo is, troll behavior, inappropriate negative comments, very little of that. So, problems. Main problems, I have 70 students, and it was difficult for me to have the time to monitor all of the comments that were being made. And that's a real serious drawback. And often, even though I encourage students to back up what they say, their assertions and opinions with, some other source, very often they didn't do that. So that was another problem. And I already mentioned about sometimes the discussion threads diverged, greatly from what I consider to be, topics more closely related to biology. But, there's a debate as to whether that's really bad or not. And the other really surprise I had was that there was a pretty high degree of lack of participation. Maybe as many as 25% of the students participated at what I consider a very weak level. And another interesting thing related to that was that three students who were great participants during lecture would ask questions, would make comments, answer questions. Three of those students made no comments whatsoever, no postings whatsoever, even though it's worth 5% of their grade. So Mike, any questions?
Yeah, if you have this many students, how are you tracking individual comments? Are you really just going through and do you have a separate checklist, or does this give you some kind of way of saying?
Well, at the end, it gives me a total, so I know how many entries they made.
Is it broken down by users?
Yeah, by username, okay. Right, which I've got to put this slide up here. Yeah, so they select an anonymous username, and I know them by that. Yes?
What's the difference between this form and the form and a discussion board? They seem to be fairly similar.
Could someone else address that?
They're similar, but this one's faster and easier to use, and you can do more fun game stuff with it.
That's close.
Yes?
Mike, did you really feel like they were making good connections between the course material and other things? I mean, did you really feel that's a good people for that?
Sometimes. That's the best way to answer that. Sometimes. I would do it again, even though I have some questions about some of the value. Yes?
I don't necessarily have a question, but rather an observation that might turn into some questions. I read an article a while back that said one of the reasons that the younger generation actually like to work in this environment is, and we're all saying that, wow, our students are really contributing in a blogosphere, but what they're not developing at the same time are the ability to communicate those same ideas vocally. So I think that we might have to be careful that we're saying, great, our students are really communicating in this written, silent, by themselves format, but then we're also, some of us saying, they're not talking in class. I think we have to be sure that we're also developing those skills to have them communicate their ideas vocally, then rather than just sitting in front of a computer, because one of the things that worries me is that if I want my students to talk about theater and the value of it as an art form, if they can only do it in front of their computer, certainly that has value, but I'm not maybe giving them the skills to then communicate one-on-one with somebody. So I think that's something for us to think about.
Very good point.
And
yes.
But this, just like anything we do, is just a piece.
Right, no, I understand.
Of the whole thing,
I
understand, but I think we have to remember that. Well, sure, but this wasn't meant to be a replacement for classroom discussion.
No, but even when you said you had, 25%, participation in this,
Yeah.
I mean, this is one way that folks can do it. And I think with any of these tools, if we think, except in your lucky case where you got really strong response on things, I think in almost any case, when we use these tools, we have to think that this is one piece out of the whole thing. I don't think anything is going to, you know, totally swoop up everybody.
Yes.
You mentioned that it's 5% of their grade. Is that based on their quantity of postings? Or the, I mean, certainly couldn't have done the quality. You've got 70 students there and stuff. And how do you grade
yes.
the quality of the information? And at the same time, you don't want your students to say, wow, this is crazy, you know, someone that's a posting and that's, you know, so when they get credit for that.
Yeah, that's a limitation of that, yeah. I'm just, you know, basing it on a reasonable entry. You know, I'm glancing at them and reading some, but not all of them. And I know there is probably some cutting and pasting here, too. I don't think I had so much of that the first semester, but second semester more. Yes?
We have six more people and four more.
Yes.
I was wondering if we could hear 30 seconds from those people about what you think is different from the book so far.
Okay. Jeff, you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just stay here. The time to walk there would be the right time. So there's two reasons that Steve twisted my arm, because I was one of those people. One is that I don't blog. I have a blog. I put stuff up. I've taken stuff down that I put up because I'm incredibly self-conscious, quite openly as an untenured faculty member about putting stuff up online in the public sphere about my work, about my teaching, about providing people with opportunities to use material against me. And that's perhaps a tad paranoid, I understand that, but it's a factor. And I think, quite frankly, a number of our students don't think enough about presenting stuff in the public sphere about themselves. There's a whole flatline campus about Facebook, things that students put up there. But that's not to say that I don't work on blogs, not to say I don't comment on blogs. I do, and I think there's a real value to them. But I think the reason Steve asked me to talk was because I don't blog. I've had conversations with both Gardner and Steve about why that is, because I think that provides lots of opportunities. There are also potential risks about putting oneself out in the public sphere in regular ways, and I think that certainly not technology. It's the fear of technology that's keeping me from doing so. Ask anyone who knows me, that's not the case. But there are concerns here. And then the other thing that I would say is I also did a forum like Michael did, and that forum was for our methods class in the history department that Alice Koska and I both did, and it was actually fairly successful in creating community across classes in this methods class. This class is incredibly intensive, incredibly time-consuming. We spent lots of time talking with each other within the class, these 15-person sections, but the students in across the sections actually found themselves talking with each other, aware of who else was taking this methods class that everyone's required to take, helping each other out. How do I footnote this? Has anyone else had trouble with speaking in public? What tips do you use? And so that was actually quite useful and quite helpful. So,
thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, I didn't have that much of those issues, but my students actually had as much actually that some of them didn't really even want to give their first name on their blog. So I have set up, some of them actually set up just with initials. I had M and H and whatever, and he didn't want to refer to anything at the university, although this student actually then became very comfortable. She even posted her wedding picture then. She got married then later on, but in the very beginning she was very conscientious about this whole thing. The problem with blogging in foreign language is, of course, the grammar and the spelling and the whole routine of writing in a foreign language, and it was one of the reasons that I didn't really go all the way through. Originally, I had it planned as a writing assignment, and I planned it actually so that I would grade on the improvement that he would make from blog to blog. I would comment in between. I had only six students, which is manageable, I thought, but it was still too much to handle six students' entries, you know, once a week, based on the topics that we had in class. And I basically kind of abandoned it in end of March or so, and didn't go through with it. I had a couple of issues, especially in as far as grading and commenting. While it is very good for my students actually to write in a public sphere and not only write for me as a professor, as an audience, that's what actually what was behind it, I had problems, I thought, you know, commenting publicly on their, you know, grammar mistakes or you know, on their writing, because that would kind of, you know, expose them to the world what you make wrong. On the other side, I could enlist the help of, you know, people in Germany to comment on my students' blogs, my sister especially. So, I implemented there. And that gave them a sense that other people actually read those blogs too. So, and that's my experience briefly. Okay.
We're actually not so far behind as you might think. All the remaining panelists have their own sessions. So you will have a chance to hear what they have to say, and I apologize to you all for not getting to speak this morning. I wanted to point out that these additional sessions, John Pierce is going to be talking about his experience with blogs as a piece of a project at 11:30. Tim O'Donnell, Greg, and I will be talking at 1:30, and do not forget the Blogging for Beginners session at 4:30. We're all going to be wearing masks, so we won't have to admit to who we are. But if you want to know how to do it from ground zero, this would be a great opportunity. Okay, it would absolutely be a great opportunity. And if you want an easy, low-cost way to play around with blogs, you can go to the Faculty Academy blog site. So you don't have to set anything up. You just register. It takes about 15 seconds and start posting. It's very straightforward. Anyway, thank you all for coming, and I appreciate the questions and the comments, and I hope we've given you something to think about.
You've been listening to a conversation about blogging at UMW. You'll find more information about Faculty Academy 2006 at www.facultyacademy.org. Thanks for listening.